Welcome to the Legends Among Us podcast. It has been a while since we have done a podcast, and it's probably going to be a while again as we are about to go to the National Training Center out of lovely Fort Irwin, California. But with us today is our regimental nutritionist, First Lieutenant Caitlin Nass. And I think last time you guys were here was in July, so it's been a while.
It has.
But I think because we're coming up on NTC, we have very good reason to bring you in, and hopefully Captain Gay as well, to talk through, in this case for today's episode, talk through some of the nutritional concerns that troopers may have, or issues. They may not be concerns to them, but I think it's worth bringing you in to talk about those things, as they could be concerns or issues, or how they can avoid certain long-term effects of being in the field, eating very poorly, and then using, as we talked about beforehand, using kind of artificial stimulants to keep themselves awake at night, because, well, I'm sure there'll be some reverse scheduling. It'll be very kinetic. Mm-hmm. I know I asked you this earlier, but I would love to hear what your workload is like right now for the regiment, because I think that would be helpful for people to know how well we're utilizing you, because you're kind of a unicorn in many ways in the conventional Army. Mm-hmm. But I want the listeners to know how important it is that we have you here. So how's work been?
Sure. Work has been amazing. And the first time that you had me on, I was still so new, new to the Army, which I just actually had my 1 year anniversary there.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
1 year. Much.
Yes, exactly. I was very new to the role, very new to the Army, which I still am, but I feel a lot more acquainted now with what the expectations are and sort of what the overall mission is, right?
Right.
So you come in as a dietitian. I had a bit of experience as a dietitian, but much less experience as a nutrition program director. Okay. So I come in and I have sort of a tunnel vision of, here's my one-on-one patient care skills.
Right.
Okay, well, there's 4,000 troopers, so yeah, you really can't accomplish one-on-one appointments with all of them.
Sure.
So what are the broader brushstrokes that we can affect change to a larger group of people more effectively? So sort of changing my perspective from that tunnel vision to sort of looking up and seeing, okay, what are some actual training events? What are things that are already happening that I can kind of get in on and implement some nutrition education? So still doing the one-on-one appointments, obviously, mm-hmm, but also, you know, doing some educational briefs, some classes, and then, you know, trying to work with the DFAC where I can as well to kind of get in there and hopefully, you know, create some positive changes too.
How has it been to integrate your subject matter expertise in with the rest of the team?
It's been really great. Captain Gay has been amazing about setting that standard of, this has to be interdisciplinary. It has to be holistic, which is the foundation of H2F. We refer patients to each other very, very regularly. I'll say the cognitive performance specialist, Tam, and I probably do it the most, maybe.
Yeah.
I think we talked briefly about this last time, but there's a lot of issues that sort of masquerade as nutritional issues that are actually spirit issues, motivation issues,
yeah,
soul issues. Yes. So I refer out to chaplains quite a bit as well,
okay,
too.
That's good.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. There is quite a bit of referral, and we're in the process of planning a couple operations right now, specifically for HSMC and then also for NTC regeneration. And so the idea kind of there is to take everybody through and determine where their needs lie. Mm-hmm. And then whatever problem exists, how do we meet that problem with this holistic interdisciplinary approach?
Good. So you mentioned HSMC, which for our audience is Home Station Mission Command. That is essentially the contingent of troopers and leaders that we're leaving behind while the vast majority of the regiment goes forward. So I know that is always kind of an interesting group of people that stay behind. What exactly are you all trying to implement for them?
Sure. So the idea is with them to kind of bring them through, and these are likely troopers who have some sort of like physical profile, something to that effect. So figuring out where the limitation exists and how we can get them still doing something, still moving, yeah, still having their needs met, so that once everybody gets back, they haven't fallen behind.
You're probably already familiar with this. It's an interesting group of individuals in the sense of, we leave a lot of people behind that have, UCMJ issues that they're struggling with, personal issues that are keeping them from deploying. Maybe they're getting out of the Army. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're on some sort of medical profile that prevents them from, truly prevents them from going out there, not necessarily those that will go out there to white cell with the medical profile. So I'll be curious to kind of hear from you and really from Steve and from Tam how well that goes.
Definitely.
So we're coming up on NTC. And again, just to preface what NTC is, most people know what NTC is. It's the National Training Center at Fort Irwin, California. So I will try and explain that as best as possible as a chaplain. It's essentially a validation exercise for the entire regiment. Every individual who is in 3rd Cavalry Regiment embodies a certain warfighting function. So we have intel, we have sustainers, we have movement and maneuver, we have command and control. And so individuals embody all of these different warfighting functions. And so we're going out there to basically fight a war. And as I like to say, we're LARPing, we're live action role playing against an enemy force, aka Black Horse, for a few weeks in the box. We'll be out there for roughly a month. We'll have RSOI, we'll have force on force, and then we'll have regeneration. All three of those phases plus live fire have an impact on our physiology. And so it's important, obviously, for us to consider our nutrition and our dietary practices while we're out there, because nutrition is just not going to be like what we're used to here. Now, for some, it might be actually better, because there's not going to be Papa John's and Domino's and all the other garbage that's like readily available that people are used to consuming. But the other side of that equation is that we're going to be consuming a lot of MREs. Mm-hmm. People are going to bring food out that isn't necessarily good for them. They're going to be bringing out a lot of artificial aids so that they can stay awake during odd hours of the day. So really, I just want to get your perspective, Caitlin, on how troopers can best prepare for that with the resources that they'll have. So when you're thinking about just overall fueling for an event like this, optimizing your performance requires good fuel. So when troopers actually go into live fire, which is going to be very kinetic and stressful, and they're going to expend a lot of energy, how would you, knowing what they're going to eat, which is going to be Mermites at best, which is essentially hot food in plastic bins, MREs at the worst, how do you think these troopers can optimize their performance based upon what they're consuming?
That's such a great question. I think it is important to consider that if you're just now considering nutrition, you're a bit late. I'm a big, big proponent of that proactive nutrition piece. Okay. So the things that we have been doing for the last few weeks, last few months, the way that we've been treating our bodies up until now is going to determine how resilient you are. And so this is something I've been talking about a lot in classes and turf talks. I've been harping on making sure you're getting enough calories, not too many, making sure that you're getting enough protein. Fiber is a huge one. I don't know. I have turned into the fiber police, which who knew that was going to be my job, but that's what I do. Vitamin D levels. That's something people don't think about. I have yet to see a single optimal vitamin D level as long as I've been here.
Okay.
Okay. And so when we have suboptimal vitamin D level, that's when we start to see those stress fractures coming into play. So this is like all stuff that I've been pushing out and have been trying to push out the last like weeks and months. Creatine is another great one. I'm like a huge proponent of creatine, especially as we enter into a more arduous environment where maybe our sleep is a little bit messed up. Well, not a little bit, but that can help retain some of that cognitive function. If there's risk of blast exposure, TBI, creatine is really, really important for that. So those are all things that sort of like should have been being done right until this point. If we've got all those things in place, great. If not, also okay. I mean, our bodies were created to be resilient. And so a month of suboptimal nutrition is not going to be the thing that makes or breaks your life.
Sure.
There are things we can do while we're there to honor that resilience, right? So in the Ruba, my understanding is that there are quite a few like food trucks and things like that.
It's like a state fair until you go further in and you're just like, there's no rides here. It's just misery.
So realistically, how long are we legitimately surviving off of MREs?
I would say when we get into the box, probably 2 weeks.
Okay.
No food trucks, no Mermites, just probably MRAs for the most part.
Okay. So such a blip on the radar, really.
It
so
is.
While we're there, and that's all the option that we have, there's only so much we can do. We can only control our controllables. Mm-hmm. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good, right? Like if all we have access to is MREs, that's what we're eating, and we're going to just have to make the most of it. So making sure that you're eating enough calories to support the activity level that we're doing mm-hmm. is going to be the most important thing. I think people underestimate how many calories they really expend in some of this like real force on force, live fire type stuff. Like mm-hmm. it can get up to the 4,000, 5,000, maybe even 6,000 calorie range if we're, you know, large in stature and we're really moving and we've got all this kit. It's hard on the body. So I would encourage people to just stay fed. Nobody loves MREs, but that's what we have. Ensuring, especially at the end of the day or like when and if things are winding down a little bit, focusing on those protein rich options if possible. And then throughout the day, like whenever you have a second, just keeping the carbohydrate up.
I'm not saying that there's an unlimited supply of MREs that are just going to be readily available, mm-hmm. but troopers can like pack multiple things in their rucksack. So if somebody was going to break down an MRE versus eating the whole thing at once, how would you recommend that they break it down in terms of what they consume at what point of the day? It sounds like you said carb rich stuff during the day, mm-hmm. more protein at night.
Yep. So during movement or if there's like a particularly active period of time, maintaining that carbohydrate, it's just like if you're going on a long run or a long ruck, you want to make sure that glycogen store is not being completely depleted. And then the protein will come into play when it's a little bit more time to rest and digest. I'm glad you brought up that people can bring their own snacks. I'm a big proponent of that. In fact, when I was in the field, a little different, it wasn't NTC. It was just basic field training when I was in Bolick. But I wanted to do this challenge to see if I could go the entire time without eating a single MRE. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure that I could get 2,000 calories a day. I'm a small female. Well, I'm not that small, but I am a smaller female. 2,000 calories is adequate for me. It is not adequate for a grown man. Okay. Yeah. So please hear that. But I wanted to see if I could get 2,000 calories a day, 140 grams of protein, 25 grams of fiber every day. And I was able to accomplish that without a single MRE for, 5 days at a time or whatever.
Just out of curiosity, where did mm-hmm. you get your fiber intake from?
Yes. Lots of nuts and seeds. So like pumpkin seeds, people don't think about. That's a really good source of protein, fiber.
Okay.
Also magnesium. Okay. Really good for recovery.
So here's just a recommendation before we get into this. I think it would be great. You are on the regimental O&I net, correct? Like you either see it in Wicker or you see it in Teams. It's where often operations information, it's basically where we put out information.
Okay.
Well, I know we're like really at in hour and people have already deployed, but it might be helpful if you were to drop something into the O&I net.
Yeah.
Just something summarizing everything that you're telling me mm-hmm. so that all of the leaders, they've at least heard from the dietitian, this is what I should do while I'm out there. Mm-hmm. So like creatine, I never would have thought to bring creatine out to help with like mental cognition when I'm sleep deprived.
Absolutely.
So that's good information. So we've talked a little bit fueling, we've talked a little bit of MRE strategy. Hydration. Mm-hmm. It'll be March, so the temperatures, from what I'm hearing, although I looked at the temperatures today, the highs are in the 50s, but it'll be highs probably in the 60s and 70s when we're there, especially going into March, but then like lows 30s, 40s at night. What should we do regarding good hydration and perhaps some more, what are some of the traps that we might fall into? Mm-hmm.
Sweat dependent. Right. So the more we sweat, the more electrolytes we're losing, the more we need to replenish the fluids. Mm-hmm. As a general rule, your body weight divided by 2 is how many ounces you should get daily. So very, very simple. Wow. I'm big on like the simple calculations.
Yeah.
So kind of generally speaking, that comes out to like 2.5 liters for women, maybe 3 liters for men, generally about a Camelback a day.
Okay.
If we're sweating, we may want to add more onto that. Does that
answer your question? That's great.
And the thing I do want to say just quickly about electrolytes. So if you are somebody that's packing your own food and there's not a lot of sodium in there, you may consider doing like some drip drops and stuff. If you are eating solely MREs though, there is likely enough sodium, likely So sure. Just something to consider. Don't feel like you need to be slamming a ton of drip drops if you are getting most of your nutrition from MREs because of that sodium content.
Supplements. So you already mentioned creatine. Mm-hmm. I feel like there was something else that you mentioned as well that would be good to, well, magnesium is not necessarily a supplement, but it's something I've used magnesium before. It's great to help you sleep as well. Anything else that you would recommend?
While in the field or yes. leading up to? Outside of caffeine, which is ergogenic, but I'm certain I don't need to remind people to take caffeine, right. you know? Yes. So that is something you can leverage. It's a tool that everybody knows they can leverage. And I think it's highly over leveraged in this population. You know, the creatine, and I was talking about vitamin D earlier, but that would be less relevant in the field. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that inevitably will happen, and I know people will again fall victim to this, is there will be somebody. Well, even leading up to before we go into the box, people will go, we'll still have access to the shop ad or the commissary. So people are going to buy energy drinks. Mm-hmm. Knowing that that's going to happen, do you recommend one? Because they're going to do it. I mean, I know some are better than others, but
yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I'm also not, I'm never going to be the dietitian that's like, you shouldn't drink energy drinks. That's the reality of the world that we live in and the population that we serve, right?
Yes.
And there's a reason people utilize that tool. It's because it's an effective tool. Caffeine is an ergogenic aid. What I see is that it's way too over leveraged. People are looking to get all of their energy from caffeine and they're neglecting their nutrition, which is the foundation. You know, right. You're asking caffeine to do the heavy lifting of a carbohydrate when caffeine, really all it does is block that adenosine receptor so that you don't feel as tired, right? So okay. It's just like, it's not actually giving you energy like a carbohydrate does.
Okay.
That being said, you can use it as a tool, especially, you know, when sleep schedule is funky. My general guidelines for people that are looking to supplement with caffeine or utilize caffeine is 400 milligrams per day as an upper limit. Okay. I would be okay with a special circumstance like this going up to that 600 milligram, but not past that. 400 milligrams for sort of that daily use. So that would be like 2 Celsius.
I mean, some of them are more processed than others. I mean, when I do consume them, I love rock stars, but I know it's in them and they're garbage. It's why they're $1.50 versus like $3 for a Celsius or something like that. So I don't want to just assume that people are going to do whatever they're going to do, but that's kind of how these training events go.
Yeah. I'm not endorsing energy drinks necessarily. Right. So if it's something that you're not already doing, it's not something that you need to put in place to see performance benefits. You can get those performance benefits from solid nutrition and black coffee if you want to do caffeine. So if that's where you're at, great. If you are going to do energy drinks, Red Bull tends to be like a less bad one because it's a little bit lower on the caffeine content, actually. Okay. I couldn't drink a Red Bull if you paid me to do it, but
because of the impact, well,
just the taste. I can't, the taste. But yeah, personal preference. Yeah. Okay. From a nutrition perspective, it's one of the better ones.
How much knowledge do you have about the long-term effects of things like energy drinks, like Zen pouches? Because what you see here in a garrison environment is the regular use of things like that until we get to the field. Then you see that regular use just kind of ramp up. So, and then people will do regeneration. People will probably dial it down a little bit because sleep will be a little bit more regulated. And then we'll come back here and they'll go back to the way that they were before. But long term, what kind of impact does it have on somebody who's like 30 years old and thinks they're invincible still?
So what happens in the box is kind of like a separate issue, right? Like it's almost like if you're going to leverage those tools, that's sort of the time to do it. That's my view on it. People may disagree and that's okay. But my view is that's a particular circumstance. What I am far more concerned about is the daily habits that people are not following, right? So over-consuming calories, not consuming high quality calories, neglecting micronutrients. Fiber, again, it's a huge one, I'm telling you. So for men, recommendations are about 35 grams of fiber per day.
Okay.
On average, I'm seeing between like 11 to 15 grams per day intake. And colon cancer is on the rise, all cancers of all types, really. And so something as simple as adding some fruits and vegetables daily, I think that is a far more effective intervention than worrying whether somebody's having an extra energy drink on their 14 days at NTC.
Yeah.
That's kind of my view on it.
So really, it's more the day-to-day lifestyle.
Yes.
And then a blip in decision making.
Yes. And we don't exist in a vacuum either, right? Sure. So it's that's what makes nutrition so cool and so frustrating, because it's like there's no one thing that's going to be the trigger, mm-hmm. but just we are a sum of all of our actions. And that includes things like physical activity, keeping a resilient mindset,
sure.
time in nature, community, faith practice, like all of those things will impact your quality of life and your longevity.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. A couple more questions for you. We mentioned this again earlier, kind of prepped you for this one, but gut health. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks is kind of a blip. I want to say it really is kind of a month, mm-hmm. but it's 2 weeks of intense mm-hmm. training that is going to shape how people consume calories. When you think about it, it is a month of altering your gut biome by what you consume. It doesn't really matter if it's just a month.
Oh, yeah. I'm all about the gut health. Home and like dial it in. I think that's a really good game plan. Some things you also can consider. I'm glad you brought this up. So something that saved my life when I was in the field and something that I recommend to everybody is just taking powdered bone broth out there. You can buy this at any grocery store. It's powdered bone broth, so totally shelf stable. About 10 grams of protein in there. And, you know, it's got like collagen, glutamine, glycine. All of those things are really, really healing for your gut. So you can kind of preserve some of that gut function while you're there.
Okay.
And then once you get back, start implementing some bone broth. Bone broth is like the thing I recommend to people. If you're cooking rice, cook it with bone broth. If you're cooking potatoes, wow. So it just bolsters the protein intake, makes it a little bit gut friendly too. You can consider doing like a round of probiotics or something if you want to.
Okay.
I'm not opposed to that necessarily. I always have a preference for whole foods, but I'm not opposed to supplementation. But the other thing with fiber, if I may, not only is it helpful with regulating your digestion, but we have a lot of concern about exposure to toxins mm-hmm. in this line of work. I mean, even our uniforms, right? The stuff that's in the MREs, blast exposures, things like that. Like there's a lot of toxic exposures, microplastics, you know, that's always a hot topic
of course.
For people. By getting enough fiber, it actually helps to detoxify some of that a little bit better too. So usually when I say that, people are a little bit more bought into upping the fiber a bit. And then the other thing with kind of detoxifying or getting back to baseline, mm-hmm. making sure that your detoxification pathways are working really, really well. So The way we detoxify, three different methods, our sweat, our bowel movements, and our urine. So making sure that we're staying as hydrated as possible, mm-hmm. making sure that our digestion is on the up and up through everything we just talked about, and then sweat. So making sure that you're staying really active. And then you can utilize the sauna too a couple times a week. I'm a big, big proponent of that. We've got two at Burba in each locker room. So
nice.
Yeah. That's my little plug to come through Burba.
Mm-hmm. Although it's pretty packed today, but I don't know how many people get to the sauna.
I know.
I love saunas too. This is good. So I'm motivated to get bone broth and to get creatine.
Awesome.
And if I have space, I will definitely pack those in my bag. I'm a huge fan of probiotics. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned to you earlier, 44 days total, I did the math, 44 days in the field. So that was 44 days over a 159-day period of consuming MREs with all of the processed garbage that was in them. And that, mm-hmm. and again, that was in conjunction with little sleep for a long period of time. And so I had to come back and do some detoxing from that experience at Ranger School. This is not quite that intense, but I imagine that there is good cause to do some sort of rehab or detoxification when they get back, if there's an interest there. So I would encourage you, as you put out some of these suggestions, that please throw that in there as well. Because even if these guys just go hard in the paint and they mm-hmm. do the opposite of everything that you just recommended, mm-hmm. which I know many of them will, that there may still be an interest there to come off of everything that they've been consuming for that 2 weeks to month long period.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be the perfect protocol. You know, I think people have this preconception that nutrition has to be this strict, rigid practice. And really, it's just about being where you are and maybe a little bit better than that. Like, how easy is it to add in powdered bone broth?
Yes.
You know, it's you don't have to reinvent your entire diet all in one day.
Sure.
I'd love to hear your experience actually a little bit with the MREs. How did you
So normally if a Ranger School student goes straight through, they don't consume that many days worth of MREs, because we did have days we were back at the camp and we would go to like a DFAC and we would eat indoors. I was there long enough that I spent about 44 days out in the field, and they would just give us two MREs that we would put in our rucksack. We could only eat them at certain times. We had to consume the whole thing within a very short amount of time. It was typically so that they could say they fed us twice a day. We would usually eat one around 11 o'clock at night and then another one like at 2 or 3 in the morning. And then that would be it until 11 o'clock the next night. And there would be, you know, actions on the objective or long movements across very dense terrain with large weights on our backs, usually carrying anywhere between 60 to 90 pounds of weight. So for me, being older, my cortisol levels were screwed up in addition to consuming this food that was overly processed. And I know that the Army was doing their best to give you something that gives you a quick burst of energy, but for probably 7 or 8 years, I just couldn't touch another MRE.
Really?
Because there was almost like a psychological effect. Having that stuff, because you become so dependent upon it. You think about it throughout the day. You think about eating this very processed. And I think we talked to you, you had mentioned you'd done some great analysis and determined that at least within like the low dense, the kosher and the halal MREs, there's about 1200 calories. I don't know how many calories are in like a regular MRE, if there's much of a difference, but you really did become dependent upon those calories, but they weren't necessarily good calories.
Yeah.
I know they felt very empty.
Did you notice any digestive issues?
Oh, all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%. Because there is not a lot of fiber, if any fiber, in an MRE.
It seems so highly variable. I actually was just looking at the back of a bunch of them today, and it was like some had 3 grams of fiber, some had like 13. It seemed to be all over the place.
But nowhere close to what you recommend.
No.
It sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting. And also, it's interesting that you mentioned that you had to just kind of scarf it down really quickly. This is something I see frequently, not necessarily super relevant to NTC, but is worth mentioning. I think people, they come through, you know, basic training, AIT, and they're so used to just scarfing down their food.
Yeah.
A lot of the digestive issues that I see, I think, are just because people are not chewing their food. It sounds silly, but it's like a lot of the recommendations I'm giving are set a timer, don't look at your phone while you're eating, chew your food completely. It should be applesauce consistency by the time you swallow it, which it isn't. I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's something worth mentioning.
It is. We actually had a student, when I was at Mountains, we were eating in the DFAC, so we're actually eating food, but it was, we had to eat so quickly that one guy actually started choking.
Yeah.
And somebody else had to perform the Heimlich maneuver on him because he was choking on his food.
Yeah.
So I almost wonder in those types of situations if it's worth either giving them food that's not as solid or giving them less food to eat.
Yeah.
But again, they have to, I'm sure that there is a metric for reaching a certain caloric intake when you do basic training, when you do certain schools, that the Army is not going to budge on. So the only way that they can compensate for that is to have you eat really fast. Well, this has been helpful. Really glad that you were able to come on and talk through this. Again, I highly recommend that you push this information out, because I think in conjunction with this podcast that will get information out more immediately to the leadership. We'll just see how it goes.
Okay.
I think the weather will be good. If it was August, we might be having a different conversation.
Yes.
So I think it's going to be pretty moderate. But inevitably, people are going to default to the habits that they are familiar with, especially those who've been in this type of environment before. And that's just like naturally what they do, is consume things poorly.
Sure.
In an aggressive way. Thank you, Caitlin, for coming on.
Thank you.
You're an incredible resource. And I'm glad that you're kind of figuring out the best ways to maximize your your expertise and kind of reach the largest group of people that you can.
Yeah, thank you for having me on again.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
That was Caitlin Nass, the regimental nutritionist, and great to have her on the show. She has a wealth of knowledge. Her words are certainly timely as we head out the door to NTC. Thanks for tuning in. Feel free to leave comments and give us a thumbs up. We're trying to get this thing spun up again, and look forward to having you back here for the next episode of Legends Among Us. Aiyah.